Welcome to another episode of The Exhibitionists. This one, we're going to talk tech, which is one of my least favorite subjects, but it ended up being a really, really fun interview with John Calloway from Info Salons Group, Freeman Company, Matt Coyne out of GES, and Adam Perry with what is it called? I always screw this up.
Events, he does the Event Tech Live show.
Thank you. The Event Tech Live out of the UK. And if Anthony seems a little far away, he was really in the same room with us. I promise. We were all crammed in together. But what happened there, Anthony?
Our booth, I mean, bless. It was a great booth. Thank you very much to B-Matrix and Oofy for providing us with it. But this was a busy room. And like I say, it could be a dull subject. So we brought in some of the most colourful people in the tech industry, events tech sector. But I sound like I'm shouting at you guys from outside of it because I was pushed way to the back, sitting in the corner, trying to make myself, in fairness, as small as possible so no one asked me any questions about technology because I know just little. But yeah, so apologies in advance to our audience if you can't hear me very well in this edition. I promise you I was there.
And we'll tell you where you can see the pictures of all of us crammed in together at the end of the podcast. And with that, let's begin. Well, we're back with the Exhibitionists and our comfy little podcasting booth, which now we've had photos taken, so that'll be great. They'll be online on my website, internationaltradeinformation.com, and on Anthony's website, archie-media.com.
Yeah.
Yay, I've remembered it for the first time ever. Write today down.
Brilliant, I get a visitor. That's exciting.
All right, so...
Spell Archie.
We're going to... We're going to do a quick introduction of the five of us. I'm Stephanie, as you all know. Anthony, you've heard of. And then we're going to go with ladies first.
Well, thank you. I'm Joanne Calloway, CEO of the Info Salons Group, which was acquired last year by Freeman.
How do I follow that? I've got a Yorkshire accent. So my name's Adam Parry. I am the editor of a publication called EventIndustryNews.com and the co-founder of Event Tech Live.
I feel like I need to make up an accent.
Hello.
You've got northwest and very, very, very east.
Yeah, true.
And Californian.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, really. I was Californian at some point, but now Englandian. Matt Coyne from GS, CCO at GS, and work across all of our kind of engagement technology, registration, new capture, and that kind of stuff.
So we're gonna have a little chat on technology, which usually bores the crap out of me. But given all these entertaining, very knowledgeable people, I think it'll be pretty good for everybody listening. We see there's so much tech being offered right now. It is overwhelming. It makes, when I hear, oh my God, another tech company, my eyes roll back in my head and I want to faint. So with that, let's talk about a couple of the trends that you see that you're liking. And if you may be offering them, you may not be offering them, or you may have just heard about them and you think, hey, maybe this is something that especially small and medium-sized organizers can afford and use without having a whole tech department try to implement it. So we'll start with Matt.
So I was looking for just some of the new stuff that we've been seeing and stuff like that. I mean, there's innovation everywhere in the industry right now, and we're probably trying to catch up to what the rest of the world is doing by probably a few years, I would say. Maybe part of that is the investment, so per your point, the smaller companies don't have the budget to necessarily test new stuff. Equally, the smaller providers maybe don't have the or aren't capable of doing things for cheap or free to test things. So it's kind of like there's a bit of a catch-22. But then there was something I saw towards the end of last year, which was the first time I guess I saw something new for a little while. And it was, I think it was Lineup Ninja. And they had this kind of whole, it was like the automation of your conference booking type platform or a speaker management type platform. So, you know, if, you know, Steph, you could only do 2 o'clock on Thursdays and Joe 1 o'clock on Monday and Wednesday, it would auto filter your whole schedule. And I could see that as super beneficial in the marketing or ops teams and saving a hell of a lot of time. From actually what seems like quite a simple task, but when you've got 50, 60, 70 speakers to manage, it's simple. And I think their model is to do big or small.
And we've been also seeing a trend where content, from some of the other people we've been talking to the last day or so, where content is really going to become king in terms of where the exhibitions are going and the Confex model. know, we've been doing it in the U.S. for forever. It's still something catching up, but that kind of, you know, if you've got 50 or 60 speakers, you're already, your heads are already spinning. So that sounds really interesting. Adam, what about you?
I suppose I'd speak from my own experience. One of the things that's very great about Eventech Live is we have a lot of companies want to work with us, and we're inbound with all the latest innovation and new startups and things like that. One of the things that we actually went out though and found this year was a way to recreate Eventech Live in VR, or at least online. So you don't have to use a VR headset.
So not like the lame VR that, or the lame virtual
digital trade shows.
Digital trade shows that we're all spinning.
No, yeah. this is literally everything shot in place overnight on day one. So all the exhibitors are there. None of the visitors, unfortunately. But what we then did with that is we uploaded that online for a number of different reasons. One was to put something out that the visitors who registered that couldn't make it to the show could actually come and have a look around. New and interested exhibitors who'd not been to the show before could look at what that stand might look like from their point of view. So it's a sales tool for us as well. And it's a place for us to actually put the content. So although we upload all our content to our own dedicated YouTube channel, you can actually go and watch the stock and the content from the main stage at the main stage. And then on the exhibitor side, those people that do come back and visit the show, or visit the show for the first time, can actually click on the exhibitors, download information, collect information, so there's more ROI there for the exhibitor.
Wow, was that really costly? I mean, I know that you were doing it with the event tech, but was it, you know, for somebody who's listening to this and they don't have a humongous budget and they...
I can actually answer that for you, because I was one of your visitors that used that. I'm based in Asia, Australia, but I couldn't get to Event Tech Live. I really wanted to.
Yeah.
And so I actually went on and I went to it. And I was incredibly surprised at how intuitive it was. I moved around. I was so impressed. I got in touch with the people that created it for you. And it's not expensive. It's quite cost effective to roll out. And I think one of the things I liked about it is it was actually a video of the actual, there were no silly avatars and anything like that. So I did like that.
And I think, like, similar for us, you know, a lot of our marketing is driven out of the US. They can't always fly over to the show and see that kind of thing. So for us to give them that walkthrough so they can physically see what the show's like and what other people are sharing and stuff, that's pretty invaluable as well.
Yeah.
Not that we would do this, because Eventech Live for us is a partnership between the companies that work with us and the showcase in itself. But Eric attested it to it earlier. You know, we need to be thinking about digital products that we can make revenue from or provide better insight and data back to the exhibitor. And it took two guys a couple of hours overnight while everything's in place to do that. You know, so it's not a big laborious project, and that could easily be packaged in or sold on top of an exhibit.
That's wow. And we've been talking about, well, what are the new digital things that people can sell?
So that was one of my questions, actually. People always say about Apple that they're like the masters of releasing the technology to the market through their phone at the time when there's likely to be a strong uptake of it. Like, you know, anyone who doesn't use Apple is always like, yeah, but we've had this stuff ages, but it's just not been picked up. Do you think that now that technology, there's a prevalence of new technologies in our industry, and therefore like a competition, you know, market competition dictates that prices come down. Do you think the majesty here is going to be picking your moment to release this new technology to an audience that is traditionally not particularly adept at picking up good, useful technology?
Absolutely. We're seeing that in Asia particularly. So we are in an industry that has to be driven by the visitor. So if it's not driven by the visitor, it's silly rolling out expensive tech and the visitor doesn't want to use it. So what we're seeing in China is that mainstream, they are using everything with their face and their voice. So because the general populace is already completely used to using their face and their voice to access restaurants or pay for taxis or anything on everyday use, then all of our voice and facial tech is being accepted readily on site at the exhibition.
Just to add to Joanne's point, I get asked about virtual reality and augmented reality quite a lot, and we have to remember that our attendees are consumers, and we sometimes have to wait for the consumer to catch up with the adoption of the technology before we can really properly implement it. AR is out there, it's being used, but not many people are walking around with devices that makes it easily accessible for them to use.
And people are also expecting it to be like the movies. But the movies, we have to remember, it's thousands of people and hundreds of thousands of hours putting these things together for 5 minutes on a video screen.
But does, like, how much does it differ in Asia with what you're working on to, say, Europe and maybe some other parts of the world in terms of budget? Because, you know, quite often here, they're still got a lot of work to get the basics right. But, yeah, you know, there's investment to do that.
The great thing is, in Asia, we are, in fact, able to roll it out inexpensively because of the everyday applications that are available to us to use. So the open source social media platform there, WeChat, it's open source, we can use it, and everyone is on it. So it's far more cost effective. In fact, it's incredibly cheap. So we have had to work out different ways to roll that out in different geographies. So when we go into the Middle East, we can't use WeChat. Well, we can use it, but the visitors won't have it on their phone, and no one wants to download an app. So we have to use different applications. But it's certainly, once you've done it and coded it, then you understand it far more, and it's much easier to roll it out in another format but that suits another geography.
I would just caveat that with, we need to be careful as an industry that we always don't look at cheap as being good,
yes,
more accessible.
Yes.
Because back to Apple.
Please.
Please.
Back to Apple, they've been one of those companies that's actually been able to incrementally increase the price of their products by providing superior products as they go along. Don't get me wrong, there's got a lot of competition out there now, but they still can get that high price point.
Well, I think from our very own experience of, I don't know how long it is, maybe 6-7 years or something like that, where it was kind of commoditized industry in a way, and quite often registration, as an example, would get just bolted on to, you know, a package to win over a big organizer or something like that. Whereas, like, you know, we were kind of coming at it with updated SaaS type technology, and that's a totally different way of how you license, how you
what technology?
Like SaaS.
What?
Software as a service.
Ah,
sorry.
Thank you.
See the tech thing. First jargon.
Appears on the board behind the speaker, yeah, just back chatting them. Yeah.
Next time we do this, let's have shots, and every time something like that's mentioned, we've
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. So, also with tech, and I think with smaller show organizers, especially, and even the medium ones, and some of the big ones, it just seems like some of them just take everything and none of it integrates, right? And there's 500 million logins, and the exhibitors just go, oh my God, and the attendees go, oh my God, because such a pain in the ass.
Show apps, man. I've got so many on my phone, and I never had to use them twice.
No, in fact, what we need to do is we have to remember, again, back to the visitor, it's about the user experience. And if you can't connect different platforms, just don't use them. You have to be able to connect an ecosystem of technology. You're not going to find one piece of technology that will do absolutely everything, and God forbid if you did find it, you'd be stuck with it, and then what would you do? So you need to be able to be in a position where you can, via APIs, connect and have one thing coming into another and another, and be seamless so that the visitor doesn't feel like they have to log in, and that it all happens seamlessly.
And I think that's what, you know, we found, obviously, with our techs, we have APIs that go wherever they need to go. You're seeing a lot of the bigger organizers, they're obviously taking it in-house, because they'll have a million different platforms from their CRMs and everything else. But there's interesting other tech like Blender that's out now. So for the...
What is Blender?
An integration platform,
it's
basically. So you can literally, any pieces of tech, they can integrate. So, you know, as the tech supplier, you kind of, here's the API and, you know, relevant keys protected, etc. But then they have already done the integration with the other suppliers. So if that's from, I don't know, registration to meeting service to something else, it's made it more cost effective than for the smaller organizer as well.
The problem that we also have, though, is that there are different blenders or products out there for different geographies. And so what we use in China, for example, is completely different.
And you can't use it in the US, probably.
Well, probably you can, but it's just everybody. So I think you've got to be prepared to use more than one ecosystem attachment device, if you want to call it that.
What I'd also add to that is the integration part for any technology company, any startup or technology company that, you know, wants to get to the big boys is looking at is, it's such a key part to getting through the door, because, you know, if you don't integrate with Salesforce, if you don't integrate with Marketo, it's going to be a no.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yes.
Do you think there's any... Thank you.
Yes, Anthony.
I was trying to make myself as small as possible in the corner of the booth so no one asked me a question. And now genuine question though, if you are spanning, like you say, we can keep the keys private and stuff, but if you're using that data across, you know, effectively the consequence of blending them, are people going to start pushing against having data from one app in another? I mean, things like facial recognition technology when you walk into a venue. Some people may not want their face to, you know, the simplicity of it is wonderful. You don't have to queue up, you know, you just walk straight into a hall and start getting on with work. But people may push back increasingly if that data is then shared, especially in Europe, across numerous platforms.
What you don't realise is that a true facial recognition system does not store the face as an image. So it is not your face that is being stored. It is a key, a number, in the case that we have, a vectorized binary number that is sent across multiple things. So until you have the decryption device, you cannot actually see that face. So it's not a JPEG. It's not an image of your face.
Oh, and you heard that guy speak recently, didn't you, about the emotional
sensing feeling, yeah.
So I've seen sensing feeling as presentation as well.
Oh no. But, I mean, we've got two guys here just chopping at the bit.
Just quickly, but that's one example. Do you think that going back to my example, on a broader scale, people are gonna push back against it?
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, there's certainly security processes and protocols and different regulations that you can go through. And I think if people may be asking for proof of that, maybe more so.
Mm.
But then it's actually, there is an element of trust. I think in our world as well, there's a lot of B2B data. That's kind of what we focus in.
Trust is the one thing that gets flagged up as being broken. Yeah.
Let me ask you all a question though. How many of you have requested any of the CCT footage from any of the venues, hotels, restaurants, bars, clubs, streets that you've been at just today? Nobody. Yeah. We're recorded a million times a day.
Yeah.
That information can be stored in the UK, at least from my knowledge, up to 7 years. And you don't actually have access to request it.
But who cares?
Exactly, because it makes it secure, doesn't it?
Wrong,
it's there for security.
In fact, the more you are, the more and more and more we are being,
But how about
entered. I have to say, in China at the moment, there is it's a little bit too much for some of the. But you can walk into a KYC store right now in China and smile, and the order that you ordered last time is delivered and paid for and everything. You don't have to do anything. So it's great. There's efficiencies. As long as it's efficient, it's great. And no one else can order your order or pay unless they have your face.
So I saw this, unfortunately, yesterday just after the session on facial detection and such like. But San Francisco even banned facial recognition. So as a city, they banned it. And I think it was based around law enforcement and government type agencies. But then, of course, San Francisco is a hub of innovation, new technology and things. And that city that is
mean that in San Francisco, you will not be able to unlock your iPhone using facial recognition because that is banned there? Can you see how ridiculous it is?
Yeah.
So I think there's one thing about banning facial recognition in a global government sense. But I think when you're using something for a device or something that you want yourself, then you're handing over that person because
consent,
you want to make
it
easier for yourself. So there's banning and there's banning. I can't imagine that.
I think that was based around the surveillance side of
things.
Right. If you're going to an event or something.
It is surveillance. People don't trust the government, especially in the Bay Area.
How bad is that they don't trust the government
well,
in America?
Hello.
This is what I mean about the blending. You may consent to one platform but not another.
I think when you like in the blending world, you're consenting to the platform. You know, at the state of registration. In many cases, it will be, you know, do you want to get to the networking app? Do you want to get into the hotel booking thing? Whatever. So you're kind of giving that consent as you register. It's not. I mean, if it's hidden, then you know it shouldn't be.
It should be
obvious, and transparency is kind of key. To make right. it.
So if I just go around the room, what are we going to set your next big technology in the next technology you expect to see in the next 12 months?
Adam might shoot me for this one. I think apps are going to die quicker than we think.
Oh, thank the Lord.
But I think it's going to be more that it's like the progressive web application. The fact that apps in our event space, it's their, you know, short shelf life. Adoption for quite a long time has been low. There are instances where they're very useful, and I've actually been using it here just to check on the schedule, for example, because it's pretty packed. But actually, you should be able to just access it quite simply and quickly from a link or a very good responsive website, and connectivity is only going to get better, maybe outside of the venues, but it's only going to get better. So you shouldn't have to then spend the money or time recreating that content on an app that you have to go somewhere to download and log into.
Gotcha.
Okay. We are by state an industry that adopts technology, so I don't think we're going to see anything that's going to be revolutionary that's going to change the way that we do things. But what I do like the idea of is, as 5G rolls out against us as consumers, some of the issues that we suffer from as delegates and attendees and even as organisers with connectivity within venues will start to disappear, because that technology will be much more powerful in some sense than what the venue can offer. So, you know, gone are the days where it's $5,000 for a cable drop at a stand. The exhibitor doesn't need
one
that.
One can only hope.
We're really spending a lot of time and investment on AI and machine learning. So what we're trying to do now is, because there is an ecosystem of platforms that are joined within an organization, an organizer can then look at their data in a new way, even building that into lead retrieval and so forth, where people with machine can detect where they've gone, what they've wanted to do before, during, and after the event, and then make really great suggestions, particularly
a la Amazon,
but really good suggestions, particularly around matchmaking and helping people to meet each other in a serendipity type moment on site. But still, instead of looking for a needle in a haystack, you know, there are 20 options out of the 2,000 exhibitors. Still will give you that opportunity, but 20 that you potentially may not have thought of before. So that's what we're going to be investing in.
Super exciting.
Yeah.
Super exciting, and not as terrifying as I had thought.
And not one person mentioned all exhibitors zipping about in Segways, which is what I fully expected. I've still got a lot of shares in Segways, so I'll wait
for that later. Health and safety
nightmare, man. This wraps up another...
On that one.
Oh my God. Buy the Segway. Keep Anthony's family fed. We'd really like to thank Joe and Adam and Matt and Anthony, and we're going to go proceed to the bar and use as many acronyms as we can for shots. Thank you again.
I personally think the future is still in segues for international exhibitions. I don't care what these tech nerds think. They don't know. They still think apps are interesting. Actually,
I hate apps.
That's interesting.
I hate
me
apps.
Too.
Sorry, everybody. And
it looks like we'll be kissing goodbye to a few of them. But then
doing the funeral on the apps. Oh, thank God.
Oh,
anyway,
but I want to say a huge thanks to Adam and to Matt and to Joanne for contributing their expertise and giving us a little bit of insight into what is otherwise quite a nebulous and confusing topic to discuss, and one which we will revisit, Steph, despite your
unbridled
hatred of the subject.
But no, it's not the hatred. I just, my eyes glaze over and they roll back in my head is all. But I think that I certainly feel better having had that conversation, that they can't keep up on everything as well. And they're the experts. So for everybody out there having the same dilemma as me and as Anthony, there is hope. There is hope for all of us. So if you liked what you heard, please pass it along. We'd like to up our readership, and we appreciate you listening to us. This is Stephanie Selesnik in Las Vegas, Nevada, saying thank you.
And Anthony in London saying much the same thing. And don't forget to give us a 5-star review. It's so much better than 4 stars.
So much. Thanks again. Bye-bye.